Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. This is Italo's Blog Talk Radio, and this is your host, Italo. And we have one of my favorite story chicks on the line. One of them, because there's two of them. Actually, there's three, counting me, or counting Victor. But enough about that. We are going to introduce our guest. C.E. Jordan is on the line.
Hi there.
Hello.
Hello.
And you have to excuse my rooster. It's getting to my studio somehow,
well,
and he wants
well,
to make
wait,
an appearance.
Wait. Is it the next door neighboring rooster, right?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, I know.
What else I don't know, I'm not really in the studio. And that's it. Excuse me.
I think that's perfect.
Well, we have birds on my show.
That's it.
As well as we had birds in your modeling years, right?
Yeah. Yeah, who would have ever known
right?
that birds would be such a big part of the modeling scene, which I was part of for a number of years in L.A., and that they would make an appearance in my show. I guess it was just, it's understood. If you've got birds, come on. Look
yeah.
at that. That's so funny.
I may have to step away from this. anyhow, we're going to
yeah.
introduce one of your
yeah.
pieces in a couple minutes. And
yeah.
I basically want to tell the audience that A Model Life was written and directed and performed by C. Jordan, who I have on the phone right now. And I'm going to read a little bio that you wrote yourself here. It was presented at the Coffee Gallery in Altadena, which is a very, very quaint. I love it. I love the stage. I love the vibe of the place. It's really cool. Bob is awesome. I love him. And basically, should I say your name on the air or no? See.
Oh, yes. I don't think I can be tracked down now that phone books don't exist anymore. Oh yeah.
So Christine, that's her name,
yeah.
and for that email that called you that one time, yes, her real name is Christine. And Christine basically performed her all true tale of modeling in L.A. and New York in her journey down the runway of life, wielding her signature combination of storytelling, music, dance, and imaginative use of props. This versatile writer-performer will kick her high heels in this modeling model bash of 40 ages. A real go see Massey show, I agree, because it was wonderful. You had us laughing from beginning to end.
Well, that was the idea, but you never know until you get in front of an audience if your recipe is going to come out right.
Well, it was a perfect combination of
thank you.
Humor, a little bit of real misadventures of Christine as a model.
Absolutely. I would characterize it the same way. They're misadventures because I think it's already a world that there's nothing predictable about it. If you're doing a live show where you have to make changes quickly, and in this case with this one store, Robinson's, which no longer exists. Who knows why? It could have been because of the birds, but there were so many animals. There were so many animals truly involved.
Tell us a little bit about the animals, because there's there's bears, there's
tigers,
yep. birds, there's dogs.
It's in the show, which is so much fun because the artistic part of it is that as a story chick and as a solo performer starting way back in 1996 when I started putting my stories and poems on stage, you are telling the story, but you're telling it in a way that is a little more entertaining and is, you know, not just relating it to the audience. So I never even really thought about these birds and animals and dogs because we were so involved in them, and to to have one particular person. They're called fashion director, and her, I don't even remember her last name, but her name was Molly. Her first name was Molly. And when she got hired by Robinson, she had big ideas, and the store was expanding, so that not only were there small shows, there were shows to open several big stores in different parts of LA. And her idea, and I don't know where it came from, was that live animals would be good accessories. Honestly, what else could they be to the clothes?
Wow.
No balloons.
Let's go.
No children.
Gita here, yeah. And see what they think about that.
Well, you know what? You say that, and we were still. You have to go back many years, but to 1977 to 1987. So that's very, very specifically those years. Clearly, lots of furs. My husband even purchased a mink for me, a short mink, which I wore once. But what different years.
No animals that, were harming this show, though, right?
Yeah. No. Let me think. No, just the models in having to deal with the animals. Forget the furs. You know what happened. I mean, I remember being at Neiman Marcus in Beverly Hills. That's where my short mink fur was purchased. And I'm sorry if PETA people are listening, but it was very regular for people, especially in Beverly Hills, to go through all the different types. You could touch a white fox. You could touch a chinchilla. You could touch a light mink, a dark mink. You had your choice if you had your money. And they were all lengths. And it was nothing to be have a fur scene, a fur scene in a show. It was nothing. Maybe not every year. Maybe not every season. Maybe not every show. But it was always considered a finale or something spectacular to have ladies in animal fur. So why not just have the actual animals?
And not only that, but you also have, I noticed you didn't know also, you also modeled in Las Vegas. It was a part of the
Well,
show.
I did, because it's like I start out my show saying I started kind of on a dare, like, go ahead, see if you can get this job as a dancer in a fashion show. And that quickly, I got the job, several jobs. But it was like, it was obvious at my height that I shouldn't be dancing because it was just kind of corny, you know. And I felt fake. Like I said, it's because I'm improvising and I'm in between. I said, I'd rather do the modeling. But there was so much going on, you know, pretty much to my surprise. Those particular years were a capsule of huge amounts of work for live models in L.A., and when they needed models in Las Vegas, it was two times that I recall. And the time that's in my show is like, well, let's just put them on the steepest set with absolutely no room to walk. And we were frightened. We had to really figure out how not to fall. How not to fall.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. And I, you know, as a writer, I think back and I make it funny and say, well, why didn't they just use the showgirls?
Right.
Why did they bring us there? Fortunately, it was a short trip and it didn't cost that much, but we flew in. And when I flew into Las Vegas for the first time, really in my life, I saw the proverbial slot machines in the airport. And I said, okay, we've arrived. But
where in Vegas were you?
I don't know where that show was. It was probably on one of the stages. They have much more elaborate shows. So the kind of shows they had back then were still kind of old school, 50s and 60s, where they were just curtain, stage, proscenium, open the curtain, showgirl type things come down. I wish I'd paid attention, but Vegas was distracting me both times because we were in the city, kind of free to roam, because you would do your shows starting at midnight.
Oh, wow.
So not only were the things extreme, the first show was very steep, and I think it was late, but I really remember the second show, and this is funny, and I don't this is not in the show, but in my show. But we know what we're wearing. It's a combination of different kinds of clothing. Bill Cosby is the host. He is the headliner.
Wow.
We're in a big ballroom. We're in a gigantic room, and what they decided to do, whoever, was put the longest runway going four different directions, not just coming out forward and going back, but we had to go on a journey one direction and then sideways and then back and then sideways, kind of like a maze. And you were so tired in your with your just one change because you had to go on this journey maze to get backstage again. And they had me doing aerobics, so I had to aerobicize on all of the jets. And there's Bill Cosby sitting there, probably ogling all the girls. Who knew? You know, sitting there in his chair, with a mic, you know, because he was the headliner. But here's the problem. When you have to do that much, and that's not even counting all the energy it took to change, but we didn't have to change quickly. What we had to do was spend an inordinate amount of time jigging and jagging and zigging and zagging. But it was after midnight. We were not ready to put this much physical effort out after midnight. So anyway, that's modeling in Las Vegas because it was a fundraiser probably. Mm. And at that time, there was nothing more marvelous to entertain people with if you wanted to make money than ladies in clothes.
Right.
See, I haven't done my research. To do this again, I want to find out what's happening now so I can make a real comparison.
Well, at the end of the show, you actually give us a little glimpse of what was it like to be a model in the 80s.
Oh, absolutely. The way they moved?
Now.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Did you see the difference?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's called Let's Smile or Let's Not Smile. Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. The research is easy in that if you just have to even just look at the LA Times and see what the pictures of the girls are looking like.
Yeah, they're
their
so
arms are by their sides.
So,
I'm
so beautiful. Look at me.
Well, they're that way, but they don't even try. I'm so beautiful, I don't even have to move my arms. Just look at me. No, if you think about what I call trends, you know, I mean, people were laughing because the freeze modeling trend, we didn't do it that much, but we were kind of forced to do it for that one show where you stand still, completely still in the same pose for 20 minutes.
Mm. Wow.
So that people could walk around. I don't know where that trend came from. And the trend, as I said, of including live animals was totally made up by Molly. I know that. That wasn't a real trend. She just couldn't keep the props and objects and dancers away from the modeling and the clothes.
So there I say that you came up with the mannequin challenge way before.
That's the thing. When I found out about it, it was news to me. I went to the venue, which is that sweet, quaint venue. It was wonderful. What you said about the coffee gallery backstage, it's just adorable. In fact, Bob, I hadn't seen him in months, maybe even a year or so. He goes, well, we're known as, the operative word is adorable. He says, the venue is adorable. So it's just a great place to be, you know, to do everything. And anyway, I came to the venue to put my cards out and to check it out probably about a month ago. And I met one of the employees, one of the baristas, Nathaniel. And he was up to date, unlike myself, and he mentioned the mannequin challenge because I said I was doing modeling. I went online, and lo and behold, there it is. I'm taking note.
You know, I'm expecting the mannequin challenge to be on your, hopefully, on your next show, The Model Life.
Well, I made reference to it. Well, you know what? That's interesting. So what is the mannequin challenge? I can kind of see it on YouTube. But
well, it's basically
freeze.
A bunch of people, you know, they have to choose a pose.
Okay.
And the camera just pans through the scene. And everybody's supposed to be very still.
As still as they can. I can tell that. And it's kind of interesting because it's not, you're not in a modeling pose. It's like you were caught in a pose in the scene.
Exactly.
And time stopped. And so I see the difference in that. But, again, I'm not quite sure where this where this so-called trend came from, because we only did it once in Beverly, at Bullock's Wilshire for the whole big show that I talked about, because it seemed perfect that instead of having, well, we could just be the mannequins. Because there was, you know, there were five floors, and so, I don't know, they
would
just
deposit.
Wouldn't it
be easier to have mannequins on the stage instead of models?
Probably. Yeah. But again, when you have people who have money, who are making decisions about parties, you have whatever you want.
Let's do some name dropping here.
Who came through that day?
Who came through
that night?
Exactly, yeah. Who do you meet?
Yeah, well, for that particular show where we were posing for 20 minutes, now let me just say that what I started out being a fashion illustration model, when that is pretty much no longer happening as a form of commerce to show things in drawing form. There were students who learned to draw really beautifully. And anyway, whenever I modeled, it was at Chouinard, which became Art Center, which became Cal Arts when it was still Chouinard, right around the corner from Bullock's Wilshire in MacArthur Park. It was 20 minutes. So I was ready to pose in beautiful clothes for 20 minutes because I'd been doing it several years before simply as an artist model for 20 minutes. That's you know, when people are drawing you, that's the time period, that's the extent of time. But it was just really a surprise, name-dropping only in the sense that it was dark. We were on the third floor at Bullock's Wilshire. This was the idea that there would be lots of still models all over the store on these little stages. The elevator opens. People come out. Some are famous, and then someone's very famous. It was Andy Warhol.
Wow.
And when he came out, nobody expected it. Of course, we couldn't even look, but fortunately my face was in the right direction, and he looked like he was glowing in a radioactive manner. He has white skin, white hair,
right.
And I swear to God, it looked like he was green. He was glowing green. It was so clear that it was him. Now, we couldn't run around and follow him. We just had to do our thing that night. And that was just, it was an outstanding memory. But while I was writing, when I was writing it, producing the show, actually, getting the show going, I read something about Andy Warhol. And pardon my French, but he was a party whore. And he would go anywhere.
Just like I'm an open mic whore.
Yep. I didn't use that word, but it was like if there was a party and this was a big party, he was there. He came from New York. This was some sort of I don't know which British line it was that they were promoting and presenting to the U.S. for the first time, but apparently it was a big enough deal that he made his appearance at Bullock's Wilshire, L.A. So,
wow.
But my name-dropping, I'm trying to remember all the different people.
Iman?
Well, Iman, this was towards the end of my career, middle end, I guess, decided to take Bill Blass up on his offer. He said, while we're walking down the runway at Saks Fifth Avenue in he's just very, very popular. People, you know, ladies loved his clothes. And so a lot of big designers made an appearance, and he was one. So we were in the middle of Saks, and we were doing a regular show, and I have a red dress on, and I'm the last person down. And as you probably have seen, when the designer comes out, they'll take one of the models by the arm and they'll walk them down. And it was me. And he leaned in and he quietly, or whatever, there's music going, he says, "You're the best model in L.A. If you ever come to New York, I will put you in all of my shows."
Oh, wow.
I mean, you might not know who Bill Blass is, but he was a very big deal at the time. You know, he did very Americana, almost like a...
Too busy being born.
I think you were. I'm sorry. Too busy being born. No, I'm amazed. Well, then you, so Iman, so it was when I did come to New York and when I did his main big show that season. I only worked one season. I walked in it was at the Four Seasons restaurant, so they had designated some sort of room for us to change in, and there's Iman without her makeup.
Oh.
Clearly Iman, but not Iman.
Right. Iman in the flesh.
So, she's not made up yet.
Right, right.
And like I was telling some people last night, is the models in New York did not come made up to any venue because there were people to make us up in New York. If you were really doing a show, you got taken care of. In L.A., we just tootled around in our cars and did the best we could, but we were in charge of everything. I mean, if there was ever a time that we were had makeup artists, I remember they often used big ballrooms, you know, because they're stages, and we were in one ballroom and then we were to model in the next ballroom, and somehow they had money to do the makeup for us in LA in this show. And you know what? We had all been doing our own makeup for so many years that we just had to say, "I don't like what you're doing. Don't touch me." It was like, "Are you kidding me?" I don't know who they were, but this one time that we were given, you know, the advantage of having people do our makeup, it just didn't work. I don't recall. I think in New York for that Bill Blass show, I have a feeling that we did our own makeup. My hair wasn't difficult to do. You can't do my hair, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't remember. I think models, if there's one thing models know how to do, is they know how to put their own makeup on. Because we know our own faces, you know.
Right, right.
So Iman, Karen Bjornsson, which is a funny story. You have to know who she is. I also met, for whatever it's worth, Ralph Lauren.
Oh, wow.
Karl Lagerfeld, and at different points, Giorgio Armani, and the stories, and then Givenchy, plus pretty much a lot of others. You know, and they're good stories, and then there's weird stories. You know, Armani, not a happy story, but maybe he's having a bad day.
I would love
maybe
to hear that story one day.
I know. I don't know. Oh, you want me to read this thing?
Yeah, actually, I was going to say, well, give us a little, I'm trying to get to the words, but I can't. Prepare us for your piece. What is it about?
Sure. Oh, the piece?
Yeah, what is
I'm going to read?
Mm-hmm.
This one is the I was reading stories that weren't included in the I didn't memorize them, so I turned them into as if I were reading fairy tales. They were true, but I said once upon a time and in the show last night. So this is the final fairy tale, but of course it's all real. So shall I go?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Once upon another time, the model of straight lines and few curves got so bored that she thought of ways to quit the modeling biz. Like getting pregnant. Well, it worked. But nigh on 5 months and not even a bump appeared. Though the only relief during the first 3 nauseous months was the adrenaline that surged through her body during the fashion shows. But one client heard that she was pregnant, though no one could tell, and they fired her because they thought someone might be able to tell. And who were the reigning queens of the L.A. runway at the time? None other than the audacious Buxom sisters. Not their real name. They were big, one blonde, one red-haired, jiggling and jostling and grinning and gushing. very curvaceous, but our sickly, skinny girl was let go. Well, her revenge, as it were, was getting booked to do a swimsuit show at the Hollywood Palladium, wearing a pregnant bathing suit, strutting down the runway at 9 months pregnant, hearing the audience, almost in one hoarse voice, say, "She's really pregnant." or there was more like whispers, like they twittered before there was Twitter. So not really a hoarse whisper. So yes, and she went on to work for 3 more years, even trying to quit by locking off her iconic bob, her blonde bob, fake blonde, and styling it into some sort of latter-day twiggy bob, even doing a show at Neiman Marcus, Newport Beach, while still breastfeeding, without a bra, in a sheer gown. Oops. Ah, Shane had left the building years ago. There.
Wow. She's pregnant.
She's that's my take on it. When I think back, when I first wrote it, I said you could hear the Twitter. She's pregnant. She's really pregnant. And it's more like little tiny whispers, but it just, I could have done it both ways. I chose something that was poetic license. She's really pregnant. So you put all the Twitters together, all the little whispers that I could hear, and it's one big horse voice. I don't know. You're a writer, right?
Yes, I am.
It comes out, it can come out a myriad of ways, right?
Yes. But yeah, basically, you know, in all seriousness, this show, whoever wasn't there, you know, shame on them. But you know, and that's what we were discussing last night after the show was over.
Yeah,
is how different are the times of modeling now, as opposed to back in the 80s or back in the 70s, and. It was just amazing to hear all the stories and to make you feel like part of the action.
Good.
It was really, really a treat.
Thank you. Thank you. I mean, you've seen a lot of my work, different lengths, different.
Because you were not only a model, but you were a ballerina before that, or dancer.
You know what? I have to say that. I was able to analyze, I had success. It was not only that there was a lot of work, but I had success because I think I was very comfortable, and since it was okay to express, to smile, to turn, to dance on the runway, I had it made. I didn't dance, but I had a style, and I had a charisma or a stage presence that made... Well, thank you. Thank you. I mean, I think it was something that was a ready-made that worked very well, you know. Okay. No, I am... it brings it all back in a very happy way. Because
Sorry. I realized you heard somebody's voice here.
I heard that.
She's just nauseous.
I didn't know if you had
any things.
So don't pay attention?
No,
okay.
Don't.
All right. I think back, even though I was very, very serious every day when I went to work, I wanted to do the best at every time and was always a little bit anxious.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of a glorious time because compared to being a dancer and a dance teacher, I made a lot of money, you know, comparatively.
Even more money than your husband in 1 month.
That 1 month, he was just delighted.
Yeah.
His eyes shone. You're kidding me. You're kidding me. So.
Right.
It's because I worked without stopping, without any days off. So anyway, we were freelance, and it's still a business. It's a business. It's art. That's called art is a business. But that art of clothing is clearly bottom line. For you make it, you have to sell it, and we were there to help sell it.
Don't pay attention to her. Once again,
Okay.
Locked
no,
up
I.
Here,
I
but, yeah. Anyways.
Okay.
I don't know.
Well, I'm not paying attention. So, no, I had, and so, think. So I think this show is a reflection of really the kind of fun and glorious time it was, even though I didn't laugh and couldn't laugh when I had to get the bird off the lady's head. It was not a laughing matter. Sorry. Why me? Who knows?
Well,
but I'm out there.
They couldn't afford
no, they couldn't afford the animal handler, the bird handler.
Right.
Nor could they afford the dogs to rehearse and find out if how they would do with us on the runway together.
How did that go?
You heard it. They took off. Oh, yeah. You're baiting me. Oh, not well. They just ran, and
they
we
you what,
were dragged.
Great Dane, or what did they give you?
You know, thank you for asking. I patted the dog's head up high because I remember it being a big dog, probably something like a Russian wolfhound, something that would be a canine version of a model. You know, something sleek. But it was some kind of a big dog, and it could have been a Great Dane. Whatever it was, they never let up. They never stopped. And we couldn't stop them. They were running up and down the stairs. I don't even remember how it stopped. I don't even know how it stopped. Mm. But we were trying to do what they wanted us to do, which was walk next to each other.
Mm.
That was just out the window right away. Somebody had a vision of a picture of some sort of a print, a French print from like the 1890s or 1900s. Yeah, where you see a person with a dog, you know, a drawn image of a beautiful, stylish woman with a tiny dog. Why didn't they get me a tiny dog?
Right. They could have given you a poodle.
Yeah, I mean, and I liked, but the poodle I got when we were on the ice was a black standard poodle.
Oh, nice.
Well, I swear, I'm not even sure that when we came out, me and the black poodle, that I was even sure that there was a different surface or that there would be a skater skating around us. They failed to tell us, oh, that's why it's slippery. They may have told us, but the reality was, again, don't fall.
And you have obstacles, too.
Oh, it's like they... a runway itself is an obstacle. You know, it's only about 4 feet at the most wide.
Yeah.
Well, the one story that I had in the show and decided not to put in. What was that?
No, sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was saying the one story, and I don't remember who I told about it. I may have told you, but oh, I was telling my daughter. I was telling Brenna. She just got home after a long trip, and they helped out. My family helped out. I mean, between the friends who came, who I call rock star angels, everyone who came to that show, plus my family who was just there to tote and run music, and my daughter is just very clear-headed and good head and shoulders. I was telling her some of the stories, and this one was about the absolute only time that models in L.A. were not booked to do this particular show. It was at Robinson's, and all the girls, they had their favorites, and these designers came in, and no one knew who they were. Robinson's thought they were wonderful. They were two young men, and they had a particular vision of who they wanted to have wear their clothes, and it was nothing like these older models, these pros that we were. There was some 16-year-old look that they wanted. So they went to the models in the agency that only posed for pictures called print. And they were 16, and they were 17 or 18 or maybe 20. They've never walked on a runway. So what happened is they said, we don't want those old girls. We want these young girls.
Of course.
And everyone from our agent to Robinson says, please don't do that. You won't have success. These girls don't know how to change quickly or walk. Please use our professionals. No, I don't like how they look in the clothes. I want these young things, you know, with
narcissistic.
Lips and Botox and hair and the whole thing. Not Botox, but, you know, cute 16-year-olds. You want to know the outcome?
Yes. I think we all
No
do.
Fewer than three of them fell off the end of the runway.
Bah.
Fortunately, it was short.
Ha-ha.
We stayed home and just waited for the news, and it came in so brilliantly.
Mm.
What a fiasco. The girls couldn't handle the lights. They couldn't make the changes. They couldn't even stay on the runway. Fortunately, it wasn't high off the ground. Most runways are really high, like 4 or 5 feet, just so, because, you know, everyone needs to see the girls. But when you have the audience in the same room, they're on the same floor. And at this point, the runway was only about 2 feet tall. Maybe they couldn't tell the difference between the rug and the runway, but they walked right off the end of it. We went, oh, really? That show went well.
Right.
So, I mean, telling that story, it's just like, it sounds like we're being mean, but it's like, okay, have a good funeral. How'd that show go? So it's like, they just kept falling off the end of the runway. They just
really?
Walked off.
How unfortunate.
Just terrible. Just. You know. I mean, it was like, I told you.
Right.
I told you so.
That is so funny.
Because there was such a difference. There was a change happening at that time to a more natural look. And we were all pretty made up. We had a lot of makeup on. And it was just the style of being kind of pretty.
Mm-hmm.
A little more curvy. And these
well,
girls
still,
were naturally.
Still have those, well, they call them plus size models, but they still have.
Yeah.
Well, now they introduce them.
Sure.
Because they realize we have to have some real women figures.
Yeah, yeah. There's so many things going on. Part of it is a destructive business, but it's got so many levels. It's like you've got the really high, expensive handmade garments, which they can't even afford to do any longer. All handmade garments. That's what haute couture is. That's the high fashion. And anything you buy in a store has been made on a machine, which is beautifully made, but there's absolutely made by hand, which you're going to pay thousands of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe be the only person in the world with that outfit. That's the kind of things that we weren't showing those, but we were in that realm, that time.
Mm-hmm.
And then the stuff they call ready-to-wear, which there's just levels, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But we did wear designer clothes. Chanel, Jeffrey Bean, just anybody. Bill Blass. I worked for Donna Karan,
mm-hmm.
for a name dropper.
Mm-hmm.
Who's Decay, before she was Donna Karan, she designed for a label called Anne Klein. She designed with a male partner. And they would come through that Saks once or twice a year. And we got to know both Donna and her partner. And I worked for her in New York. And before, she was always frighteningly nervous before her shows.
And, that must
you know,
be
behind
somewhat unnerving, too. Being
of course.
On the backstage.
I wasn't backstage. It was literally, she hadn't booked me. It was in New York. She hadn't booked me for her show because I wasn't a regular, but I was in her showroom, and I was there continuously, not showing that line, but showing the next season's line. That line, I was showing the past season's line. She was nervous about the line that no one had ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like a debut. It's like a unveiling. It's like a debut of a show or, you know, you're going to get of a restaurant or your play. This is when you do your debut of your line, you're nervous because your whole reputation is on the line. So I was there showing last season's, and I was in the showroom with her, and she just cried her eyes out and sobbed. And I was standing there, and it meant nothing to her. I was, because models are, well, they're invisible. We're invisible.
Right.
And we're not people, you know. So I kind of tiptoed out as she, but it showed me it's very tough they are very nervous. It's not easy.
Wow.
They might be very nervous about. She was anyway. Oh yeah, what would happen? What if they hate it? And she had a partner. She wasn't alone. It was she and this guy named Louis Dall'Olio who was. They were designing Anne Klein together, but there was something that just triggered her fear that night.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a late night, you know, the night before the show. And I don't recall, probably was a great success. But that's my little fly in the wall.
Well, just like that, you actually have so many stories. I was asking you yesterday, how many stories did you leave out this time?
And that's right. And I said 20, but I probably at least have 20.
Right.
Right?
Enough for another power two.
Interesting. I know. Was it you who said you should have a mini series or something?
I agree.
TV show?
I believe that it would be a hit show.
You're so funny. Well, when you're a memoir writer or you write creative nonfiction, like I love to do,
mm-hmm.
there is a phenomenon that when you start digging, more is revealed.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's enough material to go for a whole season of a show.
Well, yeah. You and then you determine is a story worthy or not. But if you're, it's hard to write a memoir because you've either forgotten things or suppressed things.
Right.
Who knows? But it's the writing, and in my case, talking with people like you and people who ask me further questions, that the other stories would just start pouring out. Because it was every day. I mean, if you want one more story, want one more story?
Well, we have enough time for one more story. Yes.
One more story? Is that okay with people?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Because remember, I'm the writer in the
book.
She's really going to... it was... Okay. After the baby was born, and he was in a stroller, my firstborn, John Eric, which I was surprised. I worked for 3 more years. My choice. I could have worked longer after he was born. But when he was around 3 or 4 months, I was so attached to him. I couldn't find a good
fitter,
any kind of a caregiver that I felt comfortable with. I lived out in the marina, and so I'm bringing him with me to fashion shows. He was a good boy, but in this case, I got booked for the first time on Rodeo Drive doing a show. Of all the places in Los Angeles, those big name places, in this case it was YSL, Yves Saint Laurent, never did shows. They never put the money out for a show. When I got booked for a show on Rodeo Drive for Yves Saint Laurent, I scrambled to figure out how I could do the show with a baby. So one of my good friends, we worked out a thing where she was still in high school. She was ex-dance student of mine. I said, Lisa, meet me at Bullock's Wilshire because I can put my makeup on where I used to put my makeup on there. You'll take the baby, okay? You're going to watch him. I'm going to go drive all the way out to Beverly Hills, come back. Thank you for babysitting. You'll have a good time at Bullock's Wilshire, wheel him around, and then I'll pay you, and then you can go home. She lived in Pasadena. She said, well, okay. So when I got there, I'm waiting for Lisa, and Bullock's Wilshire, I mean, the foyer of the bathroom is bigger than most people's apartments, okay? Not the bathroom, but the foyer of the bathroom is big enough with wonderful places to sit and big mirrors. So she comes. She's taking care of the baby. And I said, I got to put my makeup on. So I knock on the door of the dressing room where I used to work for 18 months. Hi, I'm Christine Jordan. You know, I'd like to use the dressing room to put my makeup on. I'm going to be going to Beverly Hills to do the YSL show. Do you mind if I put my makeup on in here? Do you have any idea what they said?
Mm.
Do you have any idea what those 5 models who were doing what I used to do years ago said to me?
What?
No. No. I was freaked because the whole point for me to be there was to use the lights and have the privacy there. So I went, but of course, I was